Welcome back to The Fringe. I'm your interdimensional modern heretic, and we are going to be opening the second season of the On The Fringe podcast with a discussion about Saturnalia, i.e. Christmas, i.e. Yule. Now, Saturnalia was celebrated by the Romans in a very different way compared to how it's celebrated in the West as Christmas. I'm going to touch on how the Romans celebrated it, how it came to be Christmas as it is known today, as well as some of the origins of some of the things that we use during Christmas that we're not too aware of in terms of the background. And also, there is an astrological side to it, and I'll be touching on that as well. And essentially, this is the winter solstice. The sun will reach a point where it will appear to shine farthest to the south of the equator, over the Tropic of Capricorn, thus making the movement of the winter solstice the beginning of winter. Since June 20, the altitude of the midday sun has been lowering as its direct rays have been gradually migrating to the south. The sun's altitude above the horizon at noontime is 47 degrees lower compared to 6 months prior. Your clenched fist held at arm's length measures roughly 10 degrees, so the sun at midday would be nearly 5 fists lower in the southern sky compared to on June 21st. The ancient sky watchers had no understanding of the sun's migration. They thought the celestial machinery might break down someday and the sun would continue southward, never to return. As such, the lowering of the sun was cause for fear and wonder. The armistice is defined as a staying of the action of arms. Solstice is a staying of the sun's apparent motion over the latitudes of the earth. At the summer solstice, the sun stops its northward motion and begins heading south. At the winter solstice, it turns north. Technically, at 1 minute past the moment of the solstice, the sun has turned around and started north. It will cross the equator at the vernal equinox, passing into the northern hemisphere on March 20 at 7:02 a.m. EDT. When the ancients saw the sun stop and slowly climb to a higher midday location, people rejoiced. Here was a promise that spring would return. Most cultures had winter solstice celebrations, and some adapted it to other events. In Persia, the solstice marked the birthday of Mithra, the sun king. In ancient times, December 25 was the date of the lavish Roman festival of Saturnalia, a sort of Bacchanalian Thanksgiving. Saturnalia was celebrated around the time of the winter solstice, and in 275 AD, the Roman Emperor Aurelian commemorated a feast day coinciding with the winter solstice. Die Natalis Invicti Solis, the birthday of the unconquered sun. Among the many varied customs linked with this special season for thousands of years, the exchanging of gifts is almost universal. Mother Nature herself offers the sky observer in north temperate latitudes the two gifts of long nights and a sky more transparent than usual. The reason for the clarity of winter's night is that cold air cannot hold as much moisture as warm air can. Hence, so many nights in the summer, the warm moisture-laden atmosphere causes the sky to appear hazier. By day, it is a milky washed-out blue, which in winter becomes a richer, deeper, and darker shade of blue. In northern climes, this only adds more luster to that part of the sky containing the beautiful wintertime constellations. Indeed, the brilliant stars and constellations that now adorn our evening sky, such as Sirius, Orion, Capella, Taurus, and many others, all seem like nature's holiday decorations to commemorate the winter solstice and enlighten the long cold nights of winter. This is an article written by Joe Rao, and he serves as an instructor and guest lecturer at New York's Hayden Planetarium. And he writes about astronomy for the New York Times and other publications. This article was from 2012, actually. Saturnalia, the most popular holiday on the ancient Roman calendar, derived from older farmer-related rituals of midwinter and the winter solstice, especially the practice of offering gifts or sacrifices to the gods during the winter sowing season. The pagan celebration of Saturn, the Roman god of agriculture and time, began as a single day, but by the late Republic, 133 to 31 BC, it had expanded to a week-long festival beginning December 17 on the Julian calendar, which the Romans used at the time. The winter solstice fell on December 25th. Now, during Saturnalia, work and business came to a halt. All work stopped. Schools and courts were closed, and the normal social patterns were definitely suspended. No more debt. That pair of scissors you borrowed from Pericles no longer matters. Saturn is also represented by death, and he's also represented by the sickle or the scythe. So you notice death walks around in the black cloak, can't see his face, and he has the sickle or the scythe. So that's why he's always depicted as an older man with a long beard. And of course, that's where Santa comes from. Except Santa is sort of the more jolly side of things, but Saturn is the kind of stoic father figure, disciplinary kind of guy, you know, consequences for actions and things like that. And black, the color, well, black isn't really a color, it's just the absence of light. That is the artist in me coming out. But black is also representative of Saturn, and also the shape of the cube, and the cross is folded out. Once it's folded in, it takes the shape of a cube. And also, when I mentioned black, if you think about, say, judges, they wear black robes. Those black robes are also associated with Saturn. So other names for Saturn, especially when it comes to Gnosticism, you have the Archons, and the Archons are sort of the creators of this reality. And the head Archon, Yaldabaoth, who was born from Sophia, who is the female counterpart to the source consciousness, if you will, and also considered by the Gnostics to be the creator of spirit, all things spirit, not the physical. So the creator of spirit is not the same as the creator of the 3D and the physical world and matter. Matter is also another word for mother. Matter, mother. So we're sidetracking a bit, but it still ties in. So the creator of the physical, according to the Gnostics, and also found in the writings of the Nag Hammadi library in Egypt. Very interesting stuff. So the head Archon, Yaldabaoth, who is the main creator of this 3D world, who is also represented by Saturn and is in the in Judaism, is represented by the god El, E-L. So you'll find any names with the letters E-L have association with God or the creator of the 3D. So names like Eli, Elliot, Michael, Raphael, any names with El. Kal-El, special shout out for my comic book readers. So his other names, Yaldabaoth, is also Saklas, the foolish god. Of course, the Book of Judas was not written by Judas himself, But in that book, Jesus refers to the creator of the 3D as Saklas, or the foolish god. Samael is also another name, and it means the blind god. If you notice, the God of the Old Testament was really into a lot of bloodshed and punishment and all these things. So it kind of makes sense why there's such a stark difference between the Old and New Testament, with the Gnostics and their representation of the Hidden Archon, who is also El and Saturn. And El, in Judaism, we get the god of Christianity. And of course, in ancient Egypt, they also worship Saturn as the sun god. So not all sun worship is necessarily the worship of the sun as we see it. People would decorate homes with wreaths and greenery, and their traditional togas were set aside in favor of more colorful and festive clothing. And even slaves did not have to work during Saturnalia, and they were allowed to participate in the festivities. And in some cases, they sat at the head of the table while their master served them. Work was set aside, and Romans would spend Saturnalia gambling, singing, playing music, and, you know, socializing, merriment and gift giving. And a lot of other things took place. According to some accounts, everything was legal. Theft, murder, assault, and other horrible things were allowed during that time as well. Law was just not a thing. So think The Purge. The movies make sense now, don't they? They would light wax paper candles called cerei, C-E-R-E-I. These were common gifts during Saturnalia to signify light returning after the solstice. On the last day of Saturnalia celebrations, known as Sigillaria or the Sigillaria, many Romans gave their friends and loved ones small terracotta figurines, which may have referred back to the older celebrations involving human sacrifice. Saturnalia was by far the jolliest Roman holiday. The Roman poet Catullus famously described it as the best of times. So riotous were the festivities that the Roman author Pliny reportedly built a soundproof room so that he could work during the raucous celebrations. In the 4th century AD, to replace an earlier temple, a new temple was built dedicated to Saturn in Rome, and it served as a ceremonial center of later Saturnalia celebrations. On the first day of the festivities, a young pig would often be publicly sacrificed at the temple, which was located in the northwest corner of the Roman Forum. The cult statue of Saturn in the temple traditionally had woolen bonds tied around his feet, but during Saturnalia, these bonds were loosened to symbolize the god's liberation. In many Roman households, a mock king was chosen. The Saturnalicius Princeps, or leader of Saturnalia, sometimes also called the Lord of Misrule. Usually a lowlier member of the household, this figure was responsible for making mischief during the celebrations, insulting guests, wearing crazy clothing, chasing women and girls, etc. Who's uncomfortable? The idea was that he ruled over chaos rather than the normal Roman order. The common holiday custom of hiding coins or other small objects in cakes is one of many dating back to Saturnalia, as this was a method of choosing the mock king. Now, thanks to the Roman Empire's conquests in Britain and the rest of Europe from the 2nd century BC to the 4th century AD, and their suppression of older seasonal rites practiced by the Celts and other groups, today's Western cultures derive many of their traditional celebrations of midwinter from Saturnalia. The Christian holiday of Christmas, especially, owes many of its traditions to the ancient Roman festival, including the time of year Christmas is celebrated. The Bible does not give a date for Jesus' birth, obviously, or not so obviously. In fact, some theologians have concluded he was probably born in spring, as suggested by references to shepherds and sheep in the nativity story. However, by the 4th century AD, Western Christian churches settled on celebrating Christmas on December 25th, which allowed them to incorporate the holiday with Saturnalia and other popular pagan midwinter traditions. And even though pagans and Christians coexist, and not always happily, during this period, and this likely represented an effort to convince the remaining pagan Romans to accept Christianity as Rome's official religion. Before the end of the 4th century, many of the traditions of Saturnalia, including gift-giving, singing, lighting of candles, feasting, and merrymaking, had become absorbed by the traditions of Christmas as many of us know them today. The sources for this article that I've read from: John Matthews, The Winter Solstice, The Sacred Traditions of Christmas, Saturnalia, Ancient History Encyclopedia, and Did the Romans Invent Christmas? BBC News. Article titled Saturnalia, and this is from history.com. And another fun fact, Saturn is also represented by the day of Saturday, which is also the Sabbath or Shabbat. So Saturday, given it's the original Sabbath or Shabbat, is also related to Saturn, who is El, who is Yaldabaoth, who is Jehovah, who is Sakla, Samael, all these other names. So your mind may travel to the black cube in Mecca, or the black cube that a certain sect of Jews wear on their forehead. And some cities have depictions of huge cube shapes. You know, you have a lot of, artistic sculptures found in certain cities. So there's use of the cube and maybe some animals like the bull. So other names would be like Baal or Moloch. Baal and Moloch are who people would sacrifice their children to, etc., etc. So the Old Testament might start to make more sense to some people. So all of these names belong to the same entity. Baal and Moloch are represented by the owl and the bull, so they can be used interchangeably. If you know about the giant owl statue at Bohemian Grove, it might give you an idea as to who rules over there. And also, around that time of year, there is a time where the sun gets to a certain point in the sky where it hangs on a specific group of stars that resembles a cross, and it stays there for about 2.5 days before it comes down again. So it also represents the Christ on the cross story. It's ironic that that takes place in the sky around the same time before Christianity. Anyway, so I find that interesting as well. And the same process actually takes place within the body with something called Christ oil. Christ oil or Christos oil. And it kind of travels up the spine. I believe the etymology of Calvary means skull. So this oil travels up the spine, dies on Calvary for about 2.5 days, and then leaves the skull and comes down again and goes down the spine again. It's very fascinating. So it takes place within your body with this Christ oil, which I'm actually going to get into. Another name for the Christos oil or Christ oil is also the sacred secretion. And it's also known as the Christ within or the true anointing. So in regard to this Christ oil, it also has a lot to do with vitality. It seems to have links to youthfulness and things like that. So people who tend to abuse alcohol and drugs, engage in sexual promiscuity, not judging, just saying, young people who go to war, come back grayed, haggard with wrinkles, and other such traumas can have similar effects on the body. And it would seem as though that Christ oil that's linked to vitality is somehow affected by these traumatic events or habits that we may sometimes lean on to cope with issues in our daily lives. Deplete this oil the pineal gland secretes the golden honey or melatonin. The pineal gland is located above the pituitary gland at the center of the brain. Now, the pineal gland, as named from the Judeo-Christian sect, Joseph secretes the honey. It represents the yang energy of the yin and yang. It is a masculine energy, the dominant source of melatonin, and it is bathed in the cerebral spinal fluid, or CSF, and it's also represented by the sun. Now, melatonin is associated with sleep, your mood, your immune system, circadian rhythms, anti-aging, stress reduction, suppresses cortisol. According to some, it's also associated with the living waters of the Bible. The pituitary gland produces oxytocin and vasopressin. It aids in health, activation of the pineal gland, CSF secretion, and is the feminine energy, lunar energy, referred to as Mary, which also represents the yin of the yin and yang. Ironically, oxytocin and vasopressin are white, like milk, so hence the milk to the honey. Now, oxytocin and vasopressin increase feelings of trust, peace, and empathy, and they reduce feelings of fear, anxiety, and aggression. So if you're high in fear, anxiety, and aggression, society kind of crumbles. But when people are more in a state of trust, peace, and empathy, self-explanatory. Both from the same source, the colostrum, or Santa Claus. Colostrum is also spelled similarly to Santa Claus, C-L-A-U-S-T-R-U-M. The two sacred oils travel into the solar plexus via the semilunar ganglion, pneumogastric nerve. Now, the solar plexus is located right above the navel, below the sternum, and represented by the color yellow, or the sun. The psychophysical germ, the fruit of the tree of life, is born in the solar plexus, which is the manger. The Ida, which is red, Pingala, blue, two nerve fluids, where at the crossing of the medulla oblongata, the crucifixion takes place, where it rests for 2.5 days. The sacred oil returns after the crossing or the crucifixion. It enters the cerebellum or the Golgotha or the Golgotha, the place of the skull, which would be Calvary. The fluid, Christ's refined 1,000-fold. So this process takes place within the body, and it takes place within our skies, and this gives meaning to the term as above, so below, as within, so without, which is a hermetic term. And Hermes is also Thoth from Egypt, who identifies himself through the emerald tablets that were alleged to have been written by Thoth, or Hermes Trismegistus, which means thrice great. He referred to himself as Thoth the Atlantean. In that regard, if we're going into that realm, it would seem as though he would have been a refugee from the destruction of Atlantis and ended up in Egypt. So when you're off on the inside, the external world will become lopsided as well. As within, so without. So when you're balanced, when you're eating well, sleeping well, your needs are being met socially, and the oils and substances within the body are flowing properly, and the secretions from the glands in the brain are secreting the way they should, you find yourself in a better state. So I try to avoid taking too much melatonin from outside the body, meaning like capsules, because you want to be able to train your body to make it on its own. Because if you take melatonin or things that are produced within the body from a different source, like a man-made source, it more than likely will reduce your body producing it on its own, because your body will say, oh well, it's coming in from somewhere else, so I don't need to make it as much, and it makes it more difficult for your body to make it on its own. In ancient Egypt, they would often use greenery in the home for their religious celebrations and in their worship of their sun god Ra. They used green palm rushes to signify Ra's triumph over the dark winter and to represent the triumph of life over death in general. The use of greenery in the home was later adopted by the ancient Romans, which became known as Saturnalia, for the summer solstice and the god Saturn, or Ra, or El. To celebrate the coming crops, they would decorate their homes with branches from evergreen trees. Around that time, Celtic Druid priests of Northern Europe decorated their temples with evergreen branches to symbolize eternal life. Vikings held the belief that their sun god Balder was particularly fond of evergreen plants and trees. The exact point at which the Christmas tree became an official tradition is difficult to pin down. About 1,000 years ago, people in Northern Europe would hang fir trees upside down from the ceilings of their homes during the season, but the reasoning behind the tradition is not clear. In the Middle Ages, Northern Europeans continued the plants at Christmas time tradition by placing cherry and hawthorn plants in pots and hoping that they would flower for Christmas. Those who couldn't afford to buy plants would make pyramids made of wood and adorn them to look like trees, and would decorate them with apples, paper ornaments, and candles. The cities of Tallinn in Estonia and Riga, Latvia, both claim to be the first place to utilize the official Christmas tree. Tallinn claims to have used the first modern Christmas tree in their town square in 1441. And Riga claims to have done the same in 1510. They were both claimed to have been erected by locals and merchants. The locals were said to dance around the tree and then lit the tree ablaze, which is similar to the accounts of the Yule log tradition. No one knows for sure whether these events actually took place. However, the city of Riga does have a plaque in commemoration as the location of the first Christmas tree. There is a painting in Germany dated 1521 depicting a tree being paraded through the streets of a town with a man dressed to represent Saint Nicholas riding a horse behind the tree. Some historians believe the Protestant reformist Martin Luther was the first to use the Christmas tree that was decorated inside one's home. The tree represented a scene Luther witnessed on his way home while compiling a sermon. He was walking through the forest on his way home at night, and what he saw, he wished to replicate for his family. The tree represented the forest, and the candles the stars. It was later introduced to America in the mid-1800s when German settlers brought Christmas trees to Pennsylvania, which were not quite accepted in the beginning because they were considered pagan and therefore taboo. In Europe, however, the tradition spread throughout the continent, and by the 1840s, it had reached Victorian England and the UK. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert were photographed with a Christmas tree in 1841 at Windsor Castle. Now, Americans at the time followed the royals and high society in general very closely, and through their influence and the transatlantic newspaper, the Christmas tree then began to gain popularity. Regardless of what your beliefs are about Christmas and its origins, I think we should still use it as a time to reflect and spend time with family. And if you can make it fun and eat food and make it a time to be a better person and take that with you into the new year, I think that's a good thing. So this is an extremely interesting topic. I do recommend do your own research, and not everything that's said on this podcast I necessarily agree with, but I find it very fascinating, and it's painting a picture where questions I had before are being answered slowly but surely, except, you know, for every question that's answered, you know, 50 more arise. So it's a process and a journey, and I'm enjoying this journey. I hope everyone has a happy season. even though we know it comes with hardships, but may you be strong enough to traverse your hardships and become stronger with each hardship. That being said, I hope this podcast episode was enjoyable. I hope it added value. If so, please like, follow, subscribe, whatever needs to be done on whichever platform this podcast finds you. This has been your interdimensional modern heretic signing off. See you in the next one.